And HDR Architecture, Inc. Oh, these are in the handouts. If you give us just a minute. All right. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the Court, my name is Todd Gardner. I'm counsel for the appellants, Marshall Jenny and Lindley Donnelly. Jury instruction 14 given to the jury in this case, proposed by HDR at the end of trial after we all had rested, is a clear misstatement of the law. We ask that you reverse for the following reasons. When a jury instruction is a misstatement of a law, of the law, prejudice is presumed and reversal is required. It's black-letter law in Washington across the country that a contract and the language in the contract may be considered by the jury as evidence of the standard of care the contractor must follow in pursuing that project and completing that project.
What case says that breach of a contract?
It says, well, what the jury instruction said was you may not consider the language of the contract as to whether breaching it, not following that language, constitutes negligence. So what the jury was instructed, if you look at the actual language of the jury instruction.
You are instructed there are no breach of contract claims against the defense in this case, and you may not consider whether the contract was breached in considering whether the defendants were negligent.
Correct.
Why is breach? I understand your theory is laid out in instruction 7 says this is all about this contract provision about the operations and maintenance manual. That's what the testimony has all been about. Why does the legal concept of breach of contract enter into the negligence case?
Because breach means not following standards. That's the dictionary definition, not following what's in the contract. And what's in the contract sets forth the standard of care that the design build team must follow in completing this contract. And this jury instruction starts with a sentence, you have heard testimony about the language in the contract that relates to maintenance and warranty issues. That was the entire case, was the language in the contract about those issues. So now the jury's being told, this is what the instruction's about. Then the last sentence says, this is what you can do with all that evidence you heard about language in the contract. And that sentence says, this evidence may be considered on the issue of causation, which certainly implies they can't consider it on standard of care, duty, breach of that duty, which are the concepts of negligence. The middle sentence locks that down. In the last sentence says, you may not consider whether the contract was breached in considering whether the defendants were negligent. Any reasonable juror in looking at that would say, well, it looks like everything we heard about them not following, breaching the contract, breaching the standard of care, the standards the reasonably prudent design build team would follow in the contract, we can't consider that on negligence. We can only consider it on causation. And they never got to causation, Your Honor. I mean, HDR Turner had received a letter that told them in the middle of the project, you cannot walk on these metal security ceilings, and if you do so, you void warranties. The contract specifically required that they provide that type of information to the state in the operation and maintenance manual. I mean, the letter, which is in your packet, couldn't be more clear. I mean, it's underlined. In answer to your question, can you walk on these ceilings? No. It would void all warranties. The engineer for Turner, responsible for putting together the operation and maintenance manual, Mr. McMullen, he testified, yeah, I should have put it in. because it deals with both safety and warranty issues. And then at the end of the case, a jury instruction is submitted by HDR, not submitted by any party before the case, when jury instructions were all supplied, saying, let's not consider the contract on the issue of negligence, which is standard of care, which is breach of that standard, which is the duty of the contractor. So we put on our entire case based upon this contractual language, which Washington law says a jury is allowed to consider on issues of negligence,
so
specifications.
Your argument, not that you're entitled to have the jury consider breach of the contract per se, you're just saying this instruction taken into context, hence we can't even consider the provisions of the contract.
Exactly. That's when you look at the first sentence tells them what it's about. It's about all this testimony about contract. The last sentence says you can talk about it in causation, and then it says breach can't be considered for negligence. Any reasonable jury would say that evidence has no value to us on negligence. We can only talk about all that evidence at the end of the case.
How about the theory that you take the construe the instructions as a whole? Number 7 says here's what the claims are, this provision in the contract.
What is
it complied with? Number 10 gives you the foreseeability standard for care, and number 12 gives you the ordinary standard of care. Why didn't that allow you to argue your theory? This contract provision was not complied with.
Because when you look at the claim statute, of course, it just says this is a summary of the claims of the parties. I mean, that's what it says. That's what a claim statute's about. Now then they get an instruction that is specific to, directed right at the evidence they've heard, that we've presented, saying, look, they did not follow the language in the contract. That is breach. You didn't follow it. This provides evidence as to the reasonable standard of care for the design-build team. And you cannot consider that now in the issue of negligence, only on causation, which, of course, makes no sense at all. But that's what the court ruled and how they instructed the jury. So you can have instructions saying that they have a general duty of care. You can have an instruction saying plaintiffs claim that. But the jury is presumed to follow the instructions given by the court. And the court improperly set forth an incorrect statement of law telling them they cannot consider this failure to follow the contract. You can use the breach, word breach is fine. The failure to follow the terms and conditions of the contract as to what they should do, which is their standard of care, and failed to do that. I mean, Caulfield sets it out. It says Caulfield's argument is not based on the breach of the contract, giving rise to an action in tort, nor does Caulfield's suit rest upon a third-party beneficiary claim. Rather, the contract incorporates a field manual which enumerates minimum requirements for COPE's case managers. The contract thus provides evidence of the reasonable standard of care of caseworkers managing COPE's in-home care placements. That's exactly what we were trying to do throughout trial, is say, hey, look, they voluntarily assumed a duty to provide this safety and warranty information to the state. They were provided that information clearly in a letter, and they didn't provide it to the state in violation of the contract. That is evidence of standard of care. That is evidence of negligence, and the jury was not allowed to consider it. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Mary Spillane, and I represent the respondent, HDR Architecture. With the permission of counsel for noise control and for Turner, I'm arguing on behalf of all respondents.
Oh, okay.
I think that this case and this appeal can ultimately be boiled down by re-referencing what Judge North put in his order denying the motion for new trial. He made it clear that a party is not entitled to a perfect trial, only a fair one. And here, that's what the Donnellys actually received. The court allowed almost all of their evidence over defendants' objections, excluded much of the defendants' evidence in the case, provided a set of instructions that allowed the plaintiffs to argue their theory of the case, and the jury just simply did not agree with their theory of the case.
So what did Judge North concede was imperfect?
He said two things. One, he inadvertently left in some superseding cause language in the proximate cause instruction. And secondly, he decided that he probably should not have given the mild admonishment that he gave to plaintiff's counsel during closing argument. Those were the two things that he indicated were imperfect about the case, but that they didn't materially affect or result in prejudicial error in the case.
Is the impact of Instruction 14, jurors, you cannot consider the provisions of this contract except regarding causation?
Absolutely not. The language of the instruction says there are no breach of contract claims, which is correct, and that's conceded. There are no breach of contract claims. And you may not consider breach of the contract in considering negligence. It doesn't say anything about you can't consider the language or the provisions of the contract in deciding what might constitute reasonable care. It doesn't say that. And in fact, the judge told plaintiff's counsel at the time that it was making the decision that this is what the instruction is going to say, and plaintiff's counsel was still making the argument, I can't argue my theory of the case, says, no, you can put the contract up there. You can show that. You can argue that that sets the standards for reasonable care. But what you cannot do, and what plaintiff's counsel acknowledged he could not do at the time, was you can't argue there's a breach of the contract, and therefore that is negligence. And that's what this instruction was designed to tell the jury, because after all, throughout this trial, there had been focus on this one tiny provision in thousands of pages of contractual documents, one tiny provision that they were continuously shown, continually presented with evidence about how this particular letter should have been included because it requires a list of circumstances that would affect the validity of any warranty. The irony was, though, that that was in the request for proposal document. And ultimately, when we get to the final issued for construction specifications, when you get to the ceilings, the metal ceilings, that isn't even required to put in anything about warranty information with respect to the metal ceilings. So that we have an argument, a theory of the case, that ultimately, depending upon what the jury chose to view, could well be that this wasn't even the operative contract provision, much less any determination that you can say breach equals negligence. The instruction was designed to prevent the jury from deciding this case on an incorrect basis. Ultimately,
if the court had given a one-sentence instruction that said, you've heard testimony about the language in the contract relating maintenance and warranty information, you may only consider that evidence on the issue of causation, would that be a misstatement of law?
That would be an incorrect statement, because I think that it is correct, and we don't dispute that you can consider what's in the contract to the extent it bears on the issues in the case as some evidence of what a reasonably prudent defendant might do under the circumstances. But the jury has to decide that case based upon its view of what reasonable care requires and on foreseeability under Baugh, if we use the Baugh position or the Davis versus Baugh case.
I guess it kind of comes down to, what is that last sentence? How does that impact the jury?
They know that they can't consider breach of the contract to determine negligence. They can consider the breach for purposes of causation, so that that was the mechanism by which the warning would have been provided if, in fact, they felt reasonable care required a warning that you can't walk on the ceilings. It would have been, under their theory, provide the May 23 letter in the operation and maintenance manual. But there's nothing in that instruction that says you can't consider the language of the contract. And then when you do look at the instructions as a whole, it's clear that the theory of the case was May 23rd letter should have been included as part of a list of circumstances that would affect the validity of the warranty, which is the language of the contractual provision at issue, and that they were to decide the case based upon reasonable care and foreseeability with the instructions that were given.
Does the phrase "this evidence" in the last sentence refer back to what, breach, or refer back to the language in the contract relating to maintenance?
We believe it refers back to breach, and I think that was the court's understanding as well, because the whole argument was, what do we do about this idea of a breach of contract? There's a difference between a breach of contract claim and a tort claim. And the judge was trying to make sure that the jury understood that there was a distinction and that they could not impermissibly use breach of a contract provision to simply per se negligence. And so that's what that instruction was all about. Ultimately, though, when you look at how the case was argued, it's clear that they were fully able to argue their theory of the case, and they did. And in fact, they started out when they first put up the claims instruction that has the language of the contract in it and the need to put the May 23rd letter into the operation and maintenance manual because of a list of circumstances that would affect validity of the warranties. They then argued at length how we asked everybody about this May 23rd letter. Does it provide something that affects the validity of the warranty? Should it have been included in the operations manual? And they go on for pages making that case. Then they finally put up the contract language itself on the screen. Plaintiff's counsel says, I'm not going to keep putting this up. You've seen it. And indeed, the jury had seen it and heard it ad nauseum throughout the trial.
Part of that was in the context of proximate cause, though, right?
It may have been in the section that he entitled proximate cause, but when you look at what he said, he didn't limit himself to proximate cause. It was the May, so they should have sent that May 23rd letter in and repeatedly made that statement both at the time of the initial closing argument and then again in rebuttal. And to say that he did not argue his theory of the case or could not under that instruction simply is not true, because he did argue that theory of the case.
I understand that the contract was, the provisions in the contract were repeatedly referenced. And I understand, or I assume, I haven't checked, so I assume that there were witnesses who testified that these provisions in the contract were not complied with. Were there any witnesses who actually testified using the term breach with regard to the contract?
You're really stretching my memory. I don't know that the questions were asked in terms of breach, but it was, did this provision require, ultimately questions as to whether the provision in the contract that they focused on required the inclusion of the May 23rd letter in the operations and maintenance manual.
Breach is pretty much a term of art, and some lay people would be familiar with it and others might not be. I assume that the court didn't define breach with reference to a contract anywhere else in the instruction.
There's no instruction that defines breach. That's correct.
And is your answer that we're not sure whether any witness testified to the term breach with regard to the contract?
I'm not remembering specifically whether the questions or the answers that were posed to the various witnesses about the May 23rd letter and the contract spoke in terms of breach.
I'm just trying to get a handle on how would juror number 7 utilize this instruction if they'd never heard testimony that a contract was breached and they'd not been instructed on what a breach of a contract was.
I think that there had been sufficient, as I look back on all of the testimony, I think it was pretty clear that plaintiff's counsel was continually reiterating the concept that you didn't comply with this provision of the contract, breach. You may not have said the word breach, but you didn't fulfill this provision. And that's what the jury could not use to decide negligence, the fact that one contract provision out of this whole contract was not complied with. And then I look at when plaintiff argues that there should have been additional instruction that you may consider breach of the contract as evidence of the standards and specifications to which defendants were required to follow. That language would have been an inappropriate comment on the evidence because, in fact, it was highly disputed whether the contract provision that they relied upon was even the operative provision by the time of the issue for construction specifications, because it was no longer in there pertaining to metal ceilings. Thank you.
I will just address that first point last. Exhibit 240 is the issued for construction document, so they keep saying this language was not in. Page 82810. If you got any question, take a look at it. It was there. They made the argument, and then later on, we found that page. I don't think that was, they knew it was there. It's in their exhibit. That issue is over. The question about breach is a good one. And the reason why is that our courts have said when there is some sort of term that is a term of art, as Judge Dwyer pointed out, they are to be instructed on what it means. And it's hard to know how they looked at that because they're just told the word breach without any definition.
Now, you've given us a handout, and the proposed jury instruction you've included is the one that you proposed that the court did not give. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's 32, and we did not propose it at any time during trial. We did not propose it in our opposition brief to the HDR proposed instruction, which we handed to you. We don't think the instruction was proper at all. In fact, at the very end of the argument on the 8th, we'd argued all day about this jury instruction primarily. I said, I still do not like this contract instruction at all, the one proposed by HDR. But if you're going to give it, you've got to include language that makes it clear to them they can include, they can consider the specifications in the contract. I think Judge Verellen had a good question about that defense counsel, respondent counsel admitted, if the jury is told the first and third sentences, you have heard testimony about the language in the contract relating to maintenance and warranty information. This evidence may be considered on the issue of causation. Would that be error? And they admitted yes.
Like I said, only.
Well, but what is it when they say what it can be admitted on, considered on, why would you say that if it can be considered for everything? I mean, if a jury's told, consider it on this issue, then the clear inference is you are not to consider it on other issues. Otherwise, you wouldn't need that sentence at all. So you talked about what does the term this evidence refer back to? Well, when you look at it, you see the first sentence says you have heard testimony about the language in the contract relating to maintenance and warranty information. That's the evidence. That's what it says this is about. Then at the end it says this evidence may be considered on the issue of causation. First sentence tells them what it's about. Last sentence tells them what they can use it for. Now, to suggest that the middle sentence somehow saves this instruction, I don't believe makes much sense because it basically nails down that you can only consider it for causation by saying you may not consider whether the contract was breached and considering whether the defendants were negligent. And the term breached, I don't recall ever using that in trial because it's a term of art. It's a legal term. That's talking like a lawyer. So I was asking, are you required to follow this? Are these the standards that you as a reasonably prudent design build team would follow? Their lead architect, their construction manager, and their only expert all admitted a reasonably prudent design build team should follow the languages in this instruction requiring that we provide information about circumstances or conditions that could void a warranty. They admitted it. And then they found out in writing that, in fact, you can't walk on these ceilings. I mean, their architect who selected this product did not even know that you couldn't walk on the ceilings until they got that letter. Well, if he doesn't know, how can he expect an end user to know? I mean, he's the guy who picked the product. He builds prisons for a living. So when the jury is now told all this evidence you have heard, you may not consider on negligence, and they come back with a no on negligence, that's why our case got gutted by this instruction. We ask that you reverse. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next case.